Greetings, contrarian a-holes, and welcome to another edition of Objection, your worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery, as a matter of fact. This is Judge Dan Mancini. Joining me is Judge David Johnson.
Howdy.
And we are brought to you, as always, by DVD Verdict and a generous grant from the Old White Man Cabal. And who else today? Cadbury Eggs, maybe?
Cadbury Eggs. Or, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Or your local blood bank, perhaps?
I think so, your local blood. Yeah, for sure. I think the Aramaic department in Oxford University, I believe,
yes,
they pitched in a little bit, too.
Yes, definitely. And definitely not the Anti-Defamation League.
No, they're not. They're not above board here with us. You know, we tried to ask for grant money, but we couldn't. So, you know, that does bring up a question. Can the Old White Man Cabal trace its roots back to the Roman Empire? You know?
Probably. And probably, you know, even before that. They're like the League of Shadows in Batman Begins. They probably are responsible for the destruction of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, they sent the Visigoths. Is that what you're saying?
Right, yeah. They hired the Visigoths and sent them in. Stuff like that, you know.
Right.
Their roots are deep and very sinister.
Though we are still very respectful and appreciative of their generosity for funding this podcast.
Yes.
We must add, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are very, very respectful. We want to make that clear.
I mean, then we'll get our – I mean, obviously they need to look at the documentation every year when we re-up for the grant. So, we'll give them a look at it. We'll send them these podcast transcripts too. So they know where our heart lies. You know, we want.
Yes. And they know that both of us wish to one day be old white men.
That's someday.
And to be in the cabal, if at all possible. God, when that time
comes.
That is
a steep order. That is hard to that's a hard nut to crack, you know.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I've got to get some suits and stuff like that, better car. You know, I'm not really.
That's right, you need to start slicking back your hair too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's mandatory. And yeah, maybe develop a faux European accent, too.
That's helpful. I don't know if, you know, maybe it's good when you're younger to have a ponytail, which you would eventually lose when you join the Old White Man Cabal.
Right, but you start off with a ponytail. That's a good start. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So this
speaking
is
of ponytails,
yeah,
or long hair, I guess.
Yeah, speaking of long hair, and exactly the kind of person who would not be in the Old White Man Cabal.
That's right. Yeah, right, pretty much.
This is a special Easter edition,
yes,
of Objection. And so we, being the contrarian a-holes that we are, we're going to defend a movie that's been very, very controversial.
Yeah, polarizing, perhaps.
Yeah,
right?
Polarizing. Many people have disliked it. Both of us, I saw, reviewed it on DVD.
Oh, that's right. Right, correct. Did you must have handled the Blu-ray version, I'm guessing.
No, I did the DVD version that had both the R-rated and PG-13.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear what the PG-13, would that run like 15 minutes?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was like 12 and a half minutes, including credits.
Yes, okay. Oh, okay. All right.
So we're talking about a movie that really was controversial before its director
Absolutely.
Became controversial.
And it was controversial before it was even released.
Yes. And now it's the controversy around it has, I would say, kind of been overshadowed by the controversy around its director.
Yes.
And we're talking, of course, about The Passion of Christ, The Passion of the Christ, directed by Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And the all sorts of I don't know, controversy that it stirred up, both in terms of anti-Semitism and in terms of being overly violent, I guess.
Right.
So I guess, let's just, you know, look the tough one right in the face. And in terms of the anti-Semitism.
That was definitely the biggest one you were hearing. I mean, I don't know. So, you know, I did eventually, obviously, reviewed it. I saw it in the theater. Personally, I didn't see it. I try not to be super sensitive to this stuff. But, I mean, the one thing that stood out to me is even in what you could think of would be the most or the scene that had the most potential for being, you know, anti-Semitic or whatnot, when Christ, played by Jim Caviezel, was, you know, in front of the Sanhedrin and getting hit with all the blasphemy laws, right? I mean, there were actual scenes in there where, like, you know, like, those guys were getting up and leaving out of protest. You know, I mean, right. That was pretty clear that, you know, not everyone was on board. It wasn't like this culture-wide thing. So I just think that, I mean, that was obviously, you know, that was obviously something tossed in there to, and not saying that it didn't happen, obviously, because you would think, obviously, that would have been I'm sure as it went down for real, you know, I'm sure it was just as a polarizing trial and whatnot. So I guess I didn't see it like that. In fact, my argument is, I mean, the guys who really came across as the brutal types were the Romans, I thought, you know. I mean, the Roman soldiers themselves, they were the dicks in this. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you could look as hard as you want at things and come up with stuff. And granted, Gibson's drunken ramblings in the back of the cop car, you know, doesn't help anything.
No, it does not.
But, I mean, just taking a look at the film on its own merits without reading into the director's mindset and you know, trying to unearth little subconscious things. I guess I just have a hard time seeing it. I mean, because, again, the story is what the story is, too. You know, and, you know, yeah. Christ was a Jew, and he hung out with Jews, and Jews are very prominent in the New Testament, and, you know, I mean, so it's just difficult for me to get to that point. I mean, I understand the historical context of how passion plays, you know, back in the day incited some craziness, mm-hmm. but I guess in this day and age and in this film, it just seems like too much, maybe a lot of controversy over not a lot of substance.
Yeah, and on this continent, too. I mean, really,
right.
That's where it was kind of foreign to me. What literally foreign to me is that phenomenon of violent anti-Semitism as a result of passion plays is part of the European, really political scene at the time and how, you know, religion was so tied up in politics.
Sure.
And it's not really... I mean, it is foreign on American soil that we don't have a history of
right.
that so much.
Absolutely,
yeah. And I would say, you know, one of the movie has faded for me a little bit over time, sort of like Saving Private Ryan.
Like the memory of it, or the
my liking of it.
Your liking, I haven't watched it since I reviewed it for the site, actually.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a few years either. But it was kind of starting to fade for me as it was, and that is like Saving Private Ryan in terms of it was very powerful the first time
sure.
I saw it, and then subsequent viewings it sort of got progressively weaker. But one of the things I don't really like about it is there's a lot of It leans on sort of medieval/Renaissance depictions of the Passion.
Oh yeah, very obvious.
Which is kind of cool, but it, you know, for a movie where people are speaking in Aramaic and there's supposed to be realism and stuff like that, it doesn't really work for me to have that stuff constantly pointed out. But I will say this: one of the areas where I think the anti-Semitism charges are a little bit off base is that the Sanhedrin and other Jewish characters in the movie are not depicted as grotesques the way that the Romans are.
Right.
It's the Romans who are really treated as freakish, you know, way over the top in some instances.
Absolutely. I mean,
Barabbas is like ridiculously over the top. He looks like an animal. You know, people of questionable background, I'm not sure what they would be in Herod's palace, was about the most over the top that it could get. But these were not, you know, Herod was not a Jewish religious leader. He was much more of a Gentile. Historically, I think he might have been a Gentile that was just sort of put in charge. I don't remember that particular Herod. But anyway... I thought it was it kind of tagged the Romans purposely
right.
more than the Jewish leadership, and the stuff where, because there was one line where they said, you know, let his blood be on our head, on our heads. And that was not, I think it was not subtitled, maybe purposely.
Oh, okay.
It was, I can't remember. But I mean, that's directly from the Bible. So it's sort of like, well, you know, if you think that the Gospels are anti-Semitic, then I think there you go.
Right.
But, it's not really Gibson injecting that into it.
Right, right. I mean, I would say that's interesting you point out about like the Renaissance and the way it's framed, because another big departure and like the old, like where Gibson goes off book, so to speak, is his depiction of Satan. You know,
yeah.
Satan's got to be, actually. To be honest, that is, I find that stuff that he does there the most compelling. To be honest,
yeah, that's some creepy stuff. Like
there's
like Exorcist level creepy.
There's a great scene where I think it's Judas, right? Judas agrees to the betrayal, and that that demon shows up right behind them or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that's like genuinely frightening, but that's a great like I mean I love that scene. How I mean, it just kind of goes toward like the whole atmosphere of the film was very foreboding, you know. So it very much felt like, and this is why I'm less interested in, and I know we'll get to this. I'm less interested into the gore and the suffering and the crucifixion and. You know, and in fact, you know, my argument is that particular story isn't about like the physical torment that Jesus underwent.
Right.
It was more of a, and I think this kind of jives with orthodoxy. I mean, it's really essentially kind of a spiritual battle waged, you know, on the planet there. And I think that, you know, like Saint knew kind of, you know, obviously that we're talking Christian orthodoxy, you know, generally here, but. Saint knew kind of his goose was cooked if this whole thing went down. So, you know, he brought out the, you know, you got to figure that, you know, things are getting a little dodgy around there. So, I mean, to me, that was, that what he did there was really cool. Just kind of painting this as a conflict and, you know, between, I mean, it's not even subtle too, you know, when the crucifixion goes down, there's a scene of Satan screaming into the air, right? Like,
That
scene from The Rock with Nicolas Cage
yes.
before the bombs get dropped. So it's very obvious Gibson is going for something there. You know, I mean, you know that he's telling that story how there's definitely a spiritual conflict going on. So I mean, I love that stuff. The androgynous Satan. I love the demon stuff. I mean, I think that was pretty cool actually. So. I was less interested in the spectacle of the scourging and the nails
right.
and all that stuff. That's not where the true suffering is. Obviously, if this particular story is up your alley, I mean, you know, it's the whole, you know, the price that was paid in the spiritual realm. Obviously, you know, God
right.
averting his eyes, forsaking his son. The idea that God made flesh would stoop to this level to have these earthlings kill him, or you know, that kind of compelling, and I think Gibson gets that, and I mean I think his those scenes with the supernatural stuff kind of bear that out. So so that was probably something I very much liked. I was less interested in the gore, more interested in that badass demon stuff.
Yeah, and one of the things I found really interesting about the critical response to the movie at the time when it came out is that, it was the reaction to the violence and the whole, Jesus chainsaw massacre
yeah, right.
meme that got started and all of that kind of stuff. And what I thought was interesting about that was Gibson in a lot of ways, I mean, it's a glossy kind of, from a technical level, very mainstream looking film. But the way that he put it together is very art film-like. And I thought it was interesting that these critics who normally would, you know, I mean, if Jean-Luc Godard makes references to novels or other movies or something, you know, very obscure references in his movies without explaining them, just drops them in there and expects the audience to, you know, tread water and figure it out. Critics love that.
Mm-hmm,
and this
right.
is a movie that... you know, the more that you you bring to the table in terms of being literate in terms of the Bible.
Right.
The more that you get out of it. You know, it does not, it's not a movie that explains itself. It is an
absolutely
in that it presents stuff and it expects you to provide meaning.
Right. And so what
like, it is presenting, it doesn't explain itself a lot.
So there might be people who would be like, what the heck was that demon there all of a sudden? You know, or
yeah, this is just a whole bunch of violence and there's nothing, none of it means anything because he's not really telling you, you know, he's not completely connecting all the dots. You know, he's putting a lot out there and expecting that.
I agree. I think
you know enough that you're going to connect the dots yourself.
That's true. Probably the more you know going in, you know, the more you'll get out of it. Here's a little contrary and a holery too. Like I tell you what I do not agree with. I never liked the idea of like, hey, bring your kids to see The Passion, you know?
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's not for kids and kids should not be brought to it. And I think I may have mentioned this in my review, you know, like I really did not think that way. I mean, you saw a little bit of a push that and kind of, you know, the American church environment. I saw a couple of, like, on church signs, hey, go see The Passion Priest. So I was like, yeah, you know, kids should just be watching the cartoon movies where Jesus is, like, petting sheep and smiling, you know?
Right.
You know, save the hard stuff, you know, like, save that hard theology and the ideas of the duality and, you know, and the atonement. Say that for, you know, say that for graduate school. No reason to have. So do not bring your kids to see it. It's not, you know, it's not kids. And I disagree with that, assumption by, you know, I think you saw a lot of like mainstream churches kind of go with that assumption. So do not, yeah, that's not for kids. And you're right. When you said, I haven't watched it since I reviewed it, like, you know, like you. So, and I'm not really compelled to go see it again either.
No.
It's not like it's fun viewing. Just, it's not like it's Willow, you know, I'm not going to, it's like Kickboxer even. I'm not going to go sit down and soak that up again. But, you know, I do agree that I think it did get a bad rap and it definitely wasn't as, I mean, when I came out of there, I was like, man, that is certainly not as vulgar as I thought it was going to be, you know, as a
I mean, the hype going up, you know, leading up to it, to its release was just completely over the top.
Absolutely.
You know, and some of that I'm sure was Gibson generated, you know, I mean, he saw this building controversy, I'm sure, as a, hey, this could really translate into big bucks, which it did. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. Let's talk about violence. Would you, over the top, too much, you know, not as bad as you had thought? Well, where'd you land on that?
I didn't think it was too over the top. I think there's probably a couple shots during the scourging that are a little over the top, but overall, no, I didn't think it was, you know, I mean, it didn't freak me out or anything.
I mean, maybe I'm just desensitized to all this stuff. I get me on maybe, I don't know, all the years of reviewing Italian horror for the site, who knows, you know, or whacked out French horror. But yeah, I mean, I agree. The scourging, I think there was a scene where like, you know, some flesh gets ripped off, you know, but, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, there's the shot with the, where like the sharpened bone things on like the cat of nine tails kind of rips a whole bunch of skin off of his rib cage.
Yeah. And that's
that's the shot that seemed like really.
Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. I mean, the actual crucifixion, I mean, it was bloody, but I mean, it's a crucifixion too, you know? So.
Yeah. And here, you know, the thing is,
like, what were you
expecting? as graphic as it is depicted, you know, what the texts indicate, and I don't know if it's all four gospels or just one of, but I, you know, I know that it basically says that he bled to death. And I know that there's a part in one of them where Pilate is surprised that he's dead when Joseph of Arimathea comes and says, can I take the body down and bury it? He's, 'cause normally it takes a long time for somebody to die of crucifixion.
Right, because it's not a suffocation.
Like a day or something, and it took like 6 hours or something.
Yeah, it's suffocation, obviously. Yeah, that.
Right. So the implication being that, you know, he didn't suffocate to death. He bled to death, which, you know, if it went down like we saw in The Passion, you could believe that someone would bleed to death after that, I guess. But yeah. What has the Gibson controversies changed your opinion? Because I can tell you, when I wrote the review of the DVD, it was after the first...
The drunken monologue.
But before the second controversy. So it had maybe shaded my opinion a little bit, but, I mean, have both controversies...
I mean, I wouldn't blame you. I wouldn't blame anyone for, you know, being resistant to that. I mean, we were, you know, when we were bouncing around ideas for what this podcast would be before we just landed specifically on this, we're talking about maybe looking at a bunch of Gibson's movies. And because I caught some of Apocalypto the other day, and I dearly love Apocalypto, you know.
Yeah, that's a fun movie.
I mean, I guess you get into all kinds of trouble when you start, I don't know. I guess when you start going meta or going beyond the movie that it's, you know, the contained movie and, you know, kind of projecting the director's shortcomings on it. I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know, it's pretty obvious that Gibson is a damaged guy who seems to turn out to be a super douchebag, which is unfortunate that it's the fact that it's kind of affecting his genuine movie making ability, which is, you know, which is noteworthy. But again, it's all self-inflicted too. So, I mean, not much sympathy there. So I guess, I mean, I suppose if you do play that game, there's going to be an awful lot of stuff you're not going to enjoy, you know, because they were made by or either star premium, you know, douchebags.
Yeah.
So,
I still enjoy the naked gun,
you know, I still enjoy the naked gun. So what can I tell you? Right. The Fighter. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just watched The Fighter last
there you
night
go.
And David O. Russell has got to be one of the biggest douchebags in Hollywood, but you know great
Christian Bale. Christian Bale too. Didn't veil himself either.
Screamed and yeah, you know,
that doesn't mean I'll like The Dark Knight any less, you know?
No.
Because then, yeah, once you get into that and it's like, I mean, that's a whole new conversation, but I mean, you're just, that's just, you're not going to be enjoying anything, especially if it's like, oh, I don't agree with the politics of so-and-so, you know?
Right.
Some that.
Right. And you know, it didn't, again, all of this nonsense from Gibson doesn't really change the content of the movie itself, which still looks an awful lot to me like it goes out of its way to place a, you know, at least 50% of the blame on the Romans.
Right.
I mean, you could take the view that, oh, you know, Pilate washes his hands of it and sort of puts the responsibility on the Sanhedrin and everything. But that to me is a bigger douchebag move.
Absolutely.
This guy is innocent. He has not done anything that warrants putting him to death. But, you know, this could be politically ugly for me, so I'll just let him kill the guy.
Right, right. Of course.
A douchebag move as you can possibly make.
The coward way. I mean, and again, like, you know, I mean, I just even think that assigning blame is not even how the story should be or is intended to be interpreted. I mean, it's not a...
Sort of all humanity.
It's an all humanity thing. And
Jews, Gentiles, everyone is responsible for this.
Absolutely. And if, again, that kind of goes into what you were saying, your familiarity with the orthodoxy and the story, you know, would tend to reflect, you know, maybe give more of a perspective on that because, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's obvious how it's a human condition, you know, it's not a Jewish condition or even a Roman condition.
All right.
So I don't know, maybe that's where we land. Maybe you do end up projecting something on this, whether it's what you think of Gibson as a person or what you think of this narrative and the story and, you know, the veracity of the Gospels even, I suppose it go either way. But in the end, I think a well-made movie, something that affected me when I first saw it, something I have really no desire to go back and see it, something that's not for kids. But no. Also something that does manage to do some pretty cool things, with the story that I still remember and I think is, separates itself from a lot of the
there's some nice technical aspects to that movie too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a well-made movie, obviously. Yeah, I mean, so and well acted too. I mean, who knows what kind of hell Caviezel went through. So, yeah. Yikes.
So, and, you know, I understand that Gibson is a jerk, but he's going to have to be a much bigger jerk, I would say, to get me to stop watching Mad Max and the Road Warrior.
Absolutely.
Much bigger jerk.
Hey, here's some bonus contra and a hole rating. We didn't even talk about this, but since we're talking about Easter and the big JC himself, what were your thoughts on another hugely controversial Jesus movie, The Last Temptation of Christ?
You know, I really, really don't like that movie. And not because of the theology. I mean, I don't agree with the theology.
Sure.
You know, but, and it's not, that's not a problem to me. It's that I just thought that, number one, Scorsese was kind of delving into ideas that were beyond him. Uh-huh. Like he was concerned with things on a very surface level, and I got the sense that he didn't fully grasp the book, and I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote the book.
I actually read the book.
What's
it? Nikos something. Nikos.
Yeah. I just didn't get the sense that Scorsese understood or even cared about kind of the Gnosticism at the heart of the story, and right. You know, all these ideas. You know, it was sort of like he was making a Jesus version of Mean Streets, where it was about you know, Jesus is in this group, but he's got to kind of transcend it, and he gets, you know, gets himself into trouble and all this kind of stuff, which is pretty much what always happens in most of his movies. You know, most of his best movies, like Mean Streets and stuff, they're in a group, they violate the laws of that group, and then they get, you know, ostracized, in usually in some violent way, which is Goodfellas and Mean Streets and, you know, Taxi Driver and all that kind of stuff. So, and then the fact that, you know, some of the, like, whoever, did Harvey Keitel play Judas?
It was terrible. Right. The Brooklyn accent, it was terrible. Yeah.
Right, it's like, you know, I can't deal with it. I mean, I think it's one of his most overrated movies, in a way, among those who, you know, there's a group of people who really love it, and I don't get that at all. And then there's the group of people who hate it because it's blasphemous, and I think that's, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Winding yourself up for no good reason.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it was a movie that had a couple interesting ideas. I actually like this idea of the whole idea of the last temptation. You know, and I thought that was an interesting idea, I thought. Leading up to it, obviously, there's just a lot of ridiculous kind of theology attached to it. But, it was definitely one of those situations where, what's the point? I mean, there's, you know, the controversy is not needed. It's a waste of controversy, I guess. That's where I end up. So.
And it's almost like this homage to old biblical epics where you have all these white dudes with blue eyes and stuff walking around, and they're supposed to be Middle Eastern, and, you know, mm-hmm. It's like Scorsese went out of his way to make it, you know, unrealistic so that it kind of fit into that genre.
You're right. Yeah.
Which would be something that Scorsese would kind of do, but I still find it irritating. So it doesn't, that movie just doesn't do anything for me.
Nice. Well, there's a bonus a-hole right for you, right?
Yes.
All right. Nice.
And I think I think that covers everything. It's a, you know, I hope everyone has had a happy Easter.
Right.
Whatever that means to them, whether it's, you know, chocolate eggs or deeper spiritual concepts. And is there
which we are known for on Objection, obviously.
Yes. I, you know, this has been one of the heavier episodes.
It has been,
I would say. But, you know, we are capable of this sort of thing from time to time. It's not just all Psycho Kickboxer.
That's right. That's right.
And sudden death, although in a perfect world it might be. But I guess that's it. Is there anything else left to say?
Thanks. 10 points easy.